Hello, this is the Torg Eternity Delphi Council debriefing where the storm has a name. We are your hosts, Jay and Lehman, and today we'll be talking about Storm Knight deaths or player character deaths in general. Things to think about maybe as a game master and as a player, how it might affect you or not affect you, depending. Just some thoughts that we have, because it may, although it's rare, happen in your games. Before we dive into that, though, we do encourage you to write us at torgdcd@gmail.com. You can email us questions, which we'll answer to the best of our ability. In a future episode, if you comment, then we can comment on your comments. But Jay, the main reason why I was thinking about having an episode on character death is because it doesn't really happen very often in Torg Eternity. And I know you have some players that take it really hard if a character that they're mm-hmm. invested in dies. Other people that I are in my groups and such, they love the martyr card. Like, they will actively want to get the martyr card so that they can try out a new character, because they just love to try new and different things. So there is a whole range, you know, an extreme range on where various players fall on it. I know it's always difficult also for the most part, unless you're the evil sadistic game master, which even right. if you are, having a player character die, a Storm Knight die, can even kind of be a bummer for us game masters who like to make a challenge, but then something really weird happens and it's...
Dice happen.
Exploding dice or mishaps happen. So I thought that this would be a good episode to kind of get into. As, again, Torg Eternity, in my experience, along with Classic Torg, player character death, Storm Knight's death, was rare. It happened, mm-hmm. but it was a rare thing. So do you have any experiences as a player or a game master that kind of stick out for Torg Eternity as something that players or game masters might want to think about?
Well, for Torg Eternity specifically, I haven't had any of my characters die. But that's also because I've barely played any characters. I'm the eternal GM. I have played a bit in Torganized play, and there was one scenario we played in where we had two people play martyr cards in that one scenario, and my character got cursed, essentially, and chucked into the void, and I think it still has some horrific flaw in... who only knows when she'll ever get to play again to actually get rid of it. So as a player, I haven't really seen much. Now, for Torg Eternity specifically, as a GM, I have had 6 player character deaths. And 3 of them, I guess 4 of them were kind of my own fault, and 2 of them were martyrs. So the 2 martyrs were both dwarves, which it seems to be the trend. I guess there was actually one more death. So 7. So there's the 2 dwarves that martyred to actually accomplish things in the God Box and Relics of Power. In Relics of Power, you probably know what I'm talking about. But so they died a good, glorious death to get things going. And because many of my players are much like what you were saying, I've got a couple of people that just love making characters. Mm-hmm. Like in every game, even like, you know, video games, you just love making characters. So they're like, fine, martyr card, boom, something new next time.
Yeah, an alt-aholic.
Not a problem. Yeah, exactly. And the same person. Okay, so both of those dwarves were by the same person, who also was the one running Ozzy, that Aurorian alchemist that I talked about during our Fires of Ra uh-huh. discussion, where he just fell down a ladder and died like a chump due to penetrating falling damage when the player himself wasn't even there. And he was trusting other people to control his character, which is something to really think about. Now, my group doesn't care. Like, they're fine with these things, but there are some people that might take it poorly if you entrusted their character to them, and then you come back the next week to find out that you're dead. So, you know, watch for that. Another one that died was a cyber papal warrior type, and she died just Luke from too much damage in the living land. Again, I think it was the very beginning of Relics of Power, but anyways, and that was totally because I forgot you get an up on defeat tests in the living land, so things might have been different if I had actually remembered the rules. So that was on me, but again, they already made a new character, so they're fine. The other three, however, are really my own fault, and this is something that I would have done a lot different now. This was still kind of the beginning when I was just started running Torg, and I had put some stuff out on the Infiniverse, and they had that virtual RatCon, UlyssesCon, and I was running a game there, and it was three people joined the game that were all really new to it. They didn't know the system. And we went through this scenario, and they all picked really non-combat characters. And I had everything on roll 20 and, like, basically pre-done. So in the final fight, there was these, like, super Gosspog, and there was supposed to be one per Storm Knight, but I had pre-set it to have four of them, assuming there was going to be four players. And then, for whatever dumb reason, I didn't change it, and so the combat went with these three non-combatant PCs run by people that don't know the system at all against four amped up super Gosspogs, and they actually, like, all died. All three of them was a TPK, and it was kind of, it just, like, deflated everything. I could feel all of us, like, wow, I guess you died. You failed. We're out of time anyway, but, you know, it felt really bad, and I don't know, like, how that would have necessarily affected their thoughts of Torg Eternity in general. If I was doing that again now, I definitely would have changed so many things, especially because the first half of that adventure was great, because there's really not much combat in it, and it was all about they had the reporter archetype and, like, all these things going around getting stories and leads. It was great. But then once it actually got to combat, they just got, like, pounded to death, and it was very anticlimactic. And so there's character death, and then there's TPK, which isn't always bad, which I'll maybe get to later, but it just really felt bad. So I know there's talk of GM fiat and everything, especially from Classic Torg. I don't necessarily feel you need to, like, totally cheat and, like, completely flub things, but you can definitely set things up in a better way than I did there. I should have taken away the fourth enemy. I probably should have taken away two, to be honest, and just had two of them, or had some kind of setback or something. Just as a GM, you should not just slavishly follow what's written in the adventure, even if you wrote it. Depending on the party makeup, you're going to have to change things. So be aware, and don't be afraid to change things on the fly too, which is what I didn't do there, and I really wish I did.
No, I agree with that. Being able to change in the moment. Also, if you're unsure or if you're a new game master, it's always easier to ramp up an encounter than to tone down an encounter. As example, if you throw a couple of threats against the Storm Knights and they seem to just take that fine and get rid of them, or close to get rid of them without any problem, then you can throw a couple more reinforcements the next round or two rounds later or whatever to kind of build up the tension, instead of throwing everything there and then realizing, oh no, the Storm Knights actually can't take on everything. So that's something for game masters to think. On the game master fiat, the times I've used it, I've actually used it as a rule. So it wasn't just me as a game master going, I'm going to make up a rule on the moment to help my party. It was a, in Classic Torg, the game master fiat was the game master, like, I think it was three times per adventure, they could take the top three cards, look at them, and then put them in an order, and then put them back on the top of the deck, either to ramp up the tension, or in the case that I used it in Fires of Ra that I talked about in those episodes, to bring it down a little because they were close to a TPK. When we say TPK, it's a total party kill, or the total party is killed, and that. And just to be completely clear for this episode, when we say we're talking about deaths, we are specifically talking about Storm Knight deaths, player character deaths, not the actual players.
Not players.
it's very easy when you're just talking about gaming to say player but mean player character, but we are always talking about, like, the player character died in the game, not, I would hope, not in the middle of a tour game that you would actually have a player that happened to. So that's, I just wanted to make sure that was completely out there. For Torg Eternity, I did have one player character, probably in the same Relic of Power part, in order to save the rest of the party. And the person who decided to do it, though, wasn't necessarily an in-character reason. It was an out-of-character reason. So a couple of decades previously to us playing, that same group of people were playing another game. And at the end of that game, there was a situation that required, it was an Legend of the Five Rings first edition game, which honor and duty are very, very important in that setting. And sometimes in order to not have a stain on your honor, you need to go through basically seppuku, however you say it in Japanese, because, again, that's not my... not one of the languages that I even halfway do correctly. and in that one, everybody won, but they won in a way that had that if they had lived through it, then they would be seen as pariahs and stuff, and it could stain them and their families. So they went through the ritual to clear their honor. And you always had a person who made sure that you did it. And one of the players was the last one standing and didn't care about honor and just then snuck off. So
scorpions.
No, he was a Ronin. He was okay. Actually, he was a Ronin, didn't really care. So two decades or whatever later, when we're playing Torg Eternity and we get to that type of moment where somebody needs to make the choice, you know, if I sacrifice myself, then the party lives, otherwise the whole party might die. And the player was like, hey guys, remember when I just, you know, I walked away? Well, okay, here's time for me to pay amends, and I'm gonna, you know, go out. And it was a thing that we all knew that was, we had played some adventures beforehand, but that was going to be the last adventure for those characters. So nobody was upset in any way, shape, or form. It just kind of worked out that way. The
so
martyr,
like, you guys could stop complaining about it now.
Right. Like, I've been hearing it for 20 years. Okay, now, now just be quiet. Yeah, for the people who like martyr cards, they usually just cycle through characters. I don't really have a problem with that, because a lot of times they do. My players, at least, have done it in really good, you know, places. Not just here, I want a new character, but they've actually kind of put it into some important places. I know as a player, there have been three times where I had the martyr card and was very, very close, because we were in some very dire straits, and I wasn't sure that we would succeed, and then we just hit some explosions that got us through. So I had been prepared to play it. It wasn't like I wanted to, but I was ready to and would have been fine with that. I will talk about another one, and then I'll switch back to you. The one that I felt really bad as a game master was when we had a, I believe he started off as a monster hunter and then got transformed into Nile, so he was then kind of like a weird science, you know, instead of the
pulp monster,
the pulp monster hunter, right? Using weird science instead of the alchemy shells and ammunition for the Slayer's gun. But he disconnected, which then you can't soak.
Right.
And he was like the one who got into the trap or went, you know, opened the door, took a left turn, darkness comes out, the bad nightmare comes out, and basically just hit him, and he couldn't
just takes him out.
Just did you know, an absurd amount of wounds that even if he would have not been wounded, he just, you know, he died. That character died, and I felt bad about that because that was something that just couldn't happen. It was bad luck that he had tried to do something, he ended up disconnecting, and before he could reconnect, he got hit, took so much damage because of explosions and stuff, and then couldn't spend possibilities to soak. So that was something that I felt kind of bad about. We then, though, made that character turn into the ghost and used the ghost archetype for
okay.
that character. So the character through undeath lived on. But it was still just not a character death as a game master that I really appreciated or felt. It wasn't like the high stakes, super tense, you know, yeah, you're doing the best. It was just the dumb luck, and that was something that I just felt was really bad. So what other stories do you have?
Well, I think a lot of character death is something you should... It depends on who you're gaming with, I suppose. Mm-hmm. It sounds like both of us are playing with groups that we've played with for a long time, so we kind of know what their opinions are and everything. But if you're especially just meeting up new people or forming a group or an organized play or something, it's always good to see if you're on the same page as far as player character death goes, because, I mean, players have always been fairly precious about their characters dying, but lately it's become much more of a thing. People seem to get really attached to their characters, and even having something bad happen to them sometimes can be seen as like a huge deal. So make sure your players know what you're doing before you start. Like, don't make sure they, if you are going to make it a dangerous campaign, it is always possible that you could, as GM, say, no, you're not going to die. You can almost make that claim in Torque Eternity. I mean, Torque Eternity is very player friendly. But as we've been discussing, it does happen occasionally. So just make sure that everyone's on the same page and they know it could happen, because you don't want someone to write a novel for their character backstory and then die. And especially in Torque, actually, it's good to be fluid on these things, because you could write your novel of a character backstory and then they're transformed and none of that matters anymore.
Right.
And you have to think of something new. So you want to be a little nimble for these things. For me personally, it's always really depended on the game that I'm playing.
Mm-hmm.
I know some people will just hammer every game they play into the same experience, basically. We're rolling different kinds of dice now, but the GM is still running it the way the GM always runs the game.
Mm-hmm.
I personally prefer to play games the way they're written and not introduce a ton of house rules and... You know, if a game is deadly, then it's deadly, and if a game's not deadly, then it's not deadly. So, for AD&D 2nd Edition, I ran that for a long time in high school, and we had, I think, no character deaths until the very end of a campaign where everyone was so sick of this one thing going on. We were playing the Doom Grinder adventure. It's like such a slog that 4/5 of the players begged me to kill them all. So they died. So we just ended the campaign. One player didn't know about it though. So they were all getting killed. He was like, "What's going on?" But then, so those were the only deaths. Like, we played D&D for ages, and there was never any character deaths. Then we played Cyberpunk 2020, and characters are just dropping like flies. Mm-hmm. As a player, I once got to a game where one player was already playing in a nomad game, and I rolled up my character in front of them, finished him up. The door of the APC that I was in opened up. I leaned out and got shot in the head and died. And I immediately just started erasing the sheet and rolling up a new character. And the other guy there was like, "Oh my God." So it depends on the game. Once you get to third edition D&D, things were also a little weird because it was so easy to raise dead that you could have a fair amount of character death, but it didn't really matter that you had it because they would just get raised or eventually resurrected with no penalties. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't really that big of a deal. But then I also ran Hackmaster, which is kind of infamous for its danger, and I racked up a lot of player kills that we actually, including a TPK on there. So this was for 4th edition Hackmaster, which was sort of the more parody version, but the GM was encouraged to record their kills, but also play fair. You had to take an oath. But then also I ran World of Darkness games for years and years and years, and there's only been one death in the entire time I've run countless World of Darkness and Chronicles of Darkness games, and it was PvP caused.
Mm-hmm.
And the player retired the character that caused that death immediately afterwards as well. So it really depends on the game. So you could, I think Torg is sort of predilected towards being relatively safe, but it is still an action cinematic game. Mm-hmm. And in the cinema, people do die. So it can happen. It's just not likely to happen, I think.
Yes, as you were talking about game master mistakes. So in classic Torg, the biggest mistake that happened as a game master is a character played a Nemesis card. And I was at that time we had two Storm Knights, and then there was a couple of NPCs that came in, and the players actually liked them so much they sort of became GM PCs until I started getting more players, and then once I had more players, then they kind of went to the side. But the Canadian Royal Mounted Police, Lawrence the Mountie, I remember that name very very clearly, had played a Nemesis card against a corporate ninja from that one Pan Pacifica was known as Nippon Tech, and I wasn't paying attention that the character had already taken a couple of wounds. And then when it was time for the nemesis to show up, I had like a little sliding wall trap happen, which enclosed him and the nemesis. And in my mind, it had been built up as a, you know, you and your nemesis one-on-one. But what happened was, you're wounded and almost dead, and your nemesis just sticks you and
just comes in.
Now your character is gone. So that one, I will say, that was very much fault of mine as a game master. So do kind of be aware of how many wounds and such your Storm Knights have taken to know when to have some serious encounters happen. Cutting player characters, you know, it's one thing if player characters decide to split the party, but as a game master, if you're splitting the party, make sure you're doing it well aware of what's going on. That was one. Most of them that have happened, my players have been okay with, because they have been in those situations that were not just boom, the character's dead, or stupid dice exploding. They've been right. Those really tough encounters that the party survived by the skin of their teeth. A character died, or you know, became a vampire, or you know, something like that happened. But it was a it was part of the story. It wasn't just because some bad dice exploded. Talking about bad dice in a game that me and my friends played for a while. It was very centralized at Purdue University, known as Adventure Quest. There is random crit tables, so when you criticaled, if you were the one who had been hit, then you rolled percentile, and then if you rolled low enough, you could even like it would be bad against the person who rolled the 20. But, you know, it was always like, don't roll high, don't roll high. And one of my friends, it was the first time he was playing the game. He had spent a long time learning what the world and setting and everything was about.
Right.
And then he gets into it, and this flying lizard, you know, hits him, crits him, and he rolls. And it's like, you know, your head's knocked off. And he just silently sat there looking at his character sheet like, I don't even know what to do now.
Did I just go home? Like,
right. It was very shocking. I mean, a guy who had played Torg before then, had played, you know, D&D, various editions. You know, it wasn't like he was new to role-playing. But that little instance was just like, boom, introduce a new character, boom. Like you said with your cyberpunk, that sometimes can be a little off-putting. In any game that I start now, I have if we're starting a new system that people aren't familiar with. So like if I would say, hey, we're playing another tour game, everybody makes new characters, I wouldn't do this. Unless it was a whole bunch of new people that had never played Torg before. But if the majority of people have not played the system, I have kind of a two-session nobody-dies rule. Right. Just so that those type of... I'm just learning the rules. I'm just figuring it out. And because of something I don't understand, now my character's, you know, dead. That's a way to kind of prevent that, is a just... Now, don't do stupid stuff. If you blatantly do, you know, stuff.
If you jump in the dragon's mouth, that's on you.
Right, right. But, you know, just because of bad dice rolls or whatever, you kind of have a two-session leeway to get into the game, to understand the game a little bit before things then get, you know, serious and deadly. And that's worked out for me and my groups. So
I think Torg also does a very good job at sort of skirting the edge of feeling dangerous, mm-hmm. but not actually being too dangerous, because there's a lot of levers that the players can use. Like, you can soak.
Right.
You can play cards. You know, there's a lot of different things that give them some agency in
you
it.
You have defeat tests, which is...
There's defeat tests as well, yeah. And, I mean, if you've got a good enough optant, it could just bring it back to life, I guess. But it could feel dangerous, and those are sort of the best combats or situations you get into in Torg, where it feels like you could die at any time, but then afterwards when you stop and think about it, you're probably nowhere near actually dying, but it still feels like it.
Right. And that is something I think that Torg Eternity does really well. Like those instances where I said I had a martyr card, and I was on the verge of playing it, but we got out of the situation. But that's also because we were putting cards into pools and building up our resources.
Right.
And even though a couple of people had, you know, taken wounds and stuff, and the difficulty numbers, target numbers were very hard to, you know, they were really high. They had high toughnesses. We were able to, you know, like you said, spend possibilities, spend cards, do it when you're up, or wait until you have the flurry round to play the maelstrom. So you play that on your first round, and then the enemy can't soak, and then it stops before your second round, then you don't have to worry about not being able to soak and doing or setting up things in that first round to then do the attack or whatever, all out attack the first round, and then not on the second round, so I can get, you know,
so you get rid of the vulnerable, yeah,
right, and things like that. So there is lots and lots of ways that Torg Eternity can mitigate that. But having said that, there are those times where,
yeah, sometimes
the game doesn't. One thing that I read in another system that I thought was interesting, and I've never used it as a game master, but if you are one of those groups who is, you have players or game masters who are concerned and really do get, you know, upset or, you know, that with character death, is a, you just have the player roll the defeat test. Not necessarily out in the open. They just roll it. They see whether or not they die. And then at the end of the encounter, when things are wrapping up, they tell, did I survive or not? So, and you don't even say you have to, I mean, really you don't have to roll. You just allow that person to say,
right,
I'm coming back, or the, nope, my character died, I'm going to make a new character. Which can help balance those out, because I do know some people would just say, okay, my character, you know, this happened and I rolled and I'm just going to go with the roll, or the, I still feel like I'm missing out something with this character. I didn't get as far as I wanted to go with this character. In my personal times playing recently, like, I always wanted to call myself a person who just, I didn't like when I had characters die willy-nilly, when, like, the absolute worst time my character died, and I told you this, Jay, at the beginning, was there was a system where when any character died, they could roll, like, fate dice. And if they rolled really good, basically they rolled 3d6, if they rolled all ones and twos, then something potentially good would happen. And if they rolled all sixes, something potentially bad would happen. And my character was just standing around. Here, we're fighting, but I'm not hurt. And then another character dies, and they roll those fate dice, and they rolled 3 sixes, which was the bad thing. And the bad thing was like fireball exploding, which my character got hit with. My character ended up dying. That character had something like a last chance thing, so they actually survived, and that was upsetting because that was somebody else,
right,
doing something that I'm not really a part of that role, and now I'm affected by it. The other,
is that in the game, or is that,
that it was a rule? It's a rule of the, okay, in the game. Most of the time, the game masters, and it was one that we had about 40 people who would show up, and they would divide into about 4 groups of 10 each. And for the most part, the game master is really good. This one was just at that time, for whatever reason, they had that happen, and it was just very disappointing. The second, or tied with that for me, was in the same system. My character had survived the entire first year of college that I played. It was a fantasy club, okay, a role-playing club. And most people would go through a couple of characters through, yeah, that.
Those college groups are fast and loose.
Right. So me and another guy, our characters, most of the time adventured together. But we had both survived the first year. And when we started playing in the second year, one of the game masters, like, didn't believe that we had that high, you know, of characters. Even to a point where in that system, you can actually break down your, instead of levels, they had a rate. And you could take the rate and multiply it by a number and figure out how many experience. And you could quickly determine, you know, did this guy had this many experience, do these numbers match? And right, the numbers matched, but that game master just didn't like it. So my character died that night, you know?
Right, yeah.
And I know, I knew because he was like, hey, can I see your character card? Oh, yeah, here it is. And then he's like doing the math. And like, okay, it works. And then later I die, you know? and not any of the newer ones, because that was a game that you didn't have the same XP. So you could have veteran characters with newbie characters and stuff. So those were kind of the two harshest ones that I just absolutely did not like. Very bad game mastering, and those would be things that I would strongly encourage if you're game mastering to not do. You know, it's not fun for that person who I've had characters die previously in different games and afterwards, and it hasn't really affected me, but those two kind of, you know, 30 years later, it's still turning.
Yeah, still thinking about
it. You know,
it.
you still have that resentment in it. So, do you have any other examples
or
thoughts?
Not really examples, but while you were talking about that other system of rolling the dice when you die to see what happens, I haven't played it myself, but I've heard a lot of people talking about Fabula Ultima, which is a JRPG, TTRPG. Okay. Essentially, so if you want to play like a Final Fantasy kind of deal, it's very much all those kind of tropes and everything. But I don't really know much of the system itself, but I do know that the death mechanic is basically if you are reduced to 0 hit points, the player chooses one of three options.
Mm-hmm.
They're knocked unconscious, they surrender, or they sacrifice themselves to achieve some goal. So it's kind of like, you know, you're captured, you're knocked out, or you martyr card. Mm-hmm. And so it's 100% their choice. You can't blame the GM.
Right.
But, I mean, you could blame them for getting you there, I guess. So I've often wondered what something like that might be like, too. So if you have to make a defeat test instead of rolling, mm-hmm. you just make your decision right then and there. But I thought that was an interesting thing, and especially because what you were talking about seemed like the worst possible version of that same idea.
Right.
But there's a lot of systems out now that have different kind of conflict mechanics, and that's one of the things we always talk about, it being your own Cosmverse.
Mm-hmm.
You can feel free to alter the system, too. Like, there's Dungeon World and other narrative games, like Apocalypse World or Blades in the Dark, things like that, where the damage and the death is usually brought upon by the player, not mm-hmm. the GM. I ran a Blades in the Dark game for a while, and we only had one player death, but he totally deserved it and brought it on himself. And they had this glorious funeral for him and everything, but I don't want to get too into it, but So they brought it on themselves. They had to choose that this mm-hmm. is what happens. I guess technically there was two deaths, but the other one immediately turned into a ghost, kind of like what you were talking
right.
about before. So I don't really count it because he was like literally planning on doing it. So keep in mind, you know, some other systems have different ways of dealing with character death. And it gets into an interesting situation since Mark isn't here to talk about it. I know some people have strong feelings about all characters must be the same XP.
Mm-hmm.
And no, you could have an established party and then have a character, a totally fresh 0 XP character come in and still be totally fine. Now, personally, I like the balanced XP, the equal XP, not because I worry about different power characters.
Mm-hmm.
It's just easier.
Right.
It's just easier for me to think about it. I don't have time to think about it. I switch back and forth between Torg and a third edition D&D game that I've been blackmailed into running. And when I'm trying to figure out experience, it's like, okay, this guy's this level, this guy's this level. They all started at the same level, but some have died, so they mm-hmm. lost a level for that. And then, oh, some of them are magic users, so they've been spending XP to make stuff. Okay, so they're this level, the monsters were this level, their CR rating is this, and so that means they get this much XP, their cohorts get this much XP, and by that time I'm done, I'm like, ugh. Whereas in Torg, it says, okay, you get your 5 XP, off you go.
Right.
You're all the same, be good. But I think you've had also more experience with running characters of varying power levels. It may not be due to death, but do you find that works okay?
In classic Torg, that's the only way I ran, was everybody was different. We would have people that had years and years. I mean, they had, say, eight to... In whatever their tag skill and other very useful, what they were known to do, they would have between 8 and 10 adds, because in classic Torg, there wasn't a cap at 5 with a mastery perk that allowed you to get to 8. So 8 to 10 is where they would kind of... hit their limit, and then they would start getting other skills or start increasing attributes. It was one of the very few systems where you could have somebody who was running around for 5 years of game time and somebody brand new get introduced with a new character, and that new character could do something. Now, they weren't as good as the established characters, but they always felt like they could do something through interaction attacks or stuff like that. Seeing it in Torgonized play, I have that same experience where they just limit it by, okay, this is alpha or this is beta. But beta is a huge, difference.
Right.
If you're at 50 or 195, there is a huge gap between those two numbers and what you can do. And we didn't necessarily know what the other player characters were at. I just, like, when I was playing on the streams and stuff, I just paid attention to my own character, but I never felt like I was being outshone or outclassed or anything like that. In my personal group, though, my philosophy is very similar to yours, where everybody just gets the same XP because it's just easier. And a lot of times I'm playtesting. Mm-hmm. Whether it is playtesting a new adventure or new rules using old adventures to see how compatible they are, and things like that. I just want to have everybody in that default Torg, because that's, the default Torg setting. So it's just like everybody gets the same one. If you do a martyr card, you come back, or if your character dies, your new character has the same amount of XP. It's easy, like you said. And the other games that we do, some of them, everybody has the same. Some of them, depending on if you show up on the night or don't, you might get a little bit or none and stuff. Just for Torg Eternity, it's simpler that way. But I still feel that it is one of the games that you don't feel that crunch so much if there's a larger gap between experience points, just by the way that interaction attacks work. And you can always find something cool to do with a skill that somebody else doesn't have.
Something that often gets brought up by people as kind of a straw man, I think, because I've never seen it actually happen. Mm-hmm. I'm curious if you have. Have you ever seen someone's character die, and then they just, because it's the same XP, they just make literally the exact same character with a different name?
In Torg Eternity... Well, no, in Torg and Torg Eternity, no. The closest I came to is there were certain archetypes. In Classic Torg, they were called templates, but they were basically archetypes. And in Torg Eternity, they're archetypes, where one of them, for some reason, is like the thing that everybody wants to play. But I haven't had anybody who just, my character died and I'm bringing back, Bob died. I'm bringing back Bob Jr. or Rob or, Bobby. It hasn't been anything like that where it's just bringing... I have heard about it. Oh, I'll just martyr myself and then I can put the XP in a better place. I think with the source book staggering out, which I allowed people to, when their source book came out, as a kind of like, hey, you get to...
Yeah.
You get to revise, kind of rebuild your character.
A free rebuild, yeah.
And then because all the books, you get Pan Pacifica. Well, while the majority of it is Pan Pacifica, there are things in there that appeal to other people. So if other people would be like, hey, that, I could use that, then I'd be like, okay, yeah. You can rebuild too. So I think that cut down on things. But even since Pan Pacifica Wave came out, I haven't had that, clone character right. at the, but again, like you, I've heard people talk about that a lot. Like, oh, you could just do that. Oh, you could just do that. But you know, I think
it seems like something people talk about doing, but no one actually does it. But
right.
I guess if anyone's had experience with that, you could comment on it.
Right. In a non-Torg game, I did something similar a couple of times, and this was something I was going to bring up anyway, so this is a good thing. As Jay, you had mentioned earlier, knowing your players in your group is also really good. And sometimes it's like, as I said, most of the time, if my character dies and it's a valid, what I think is a valid reason, I'm fine. Just make up a new character. The times that didn't sit well with me, and then I had to step back and going, why is this specific character death really affecting me when they hadn't, you know, before? One of them was because I didn't like the system. Mm. Like, I was playing and the setting was cool, the adventure path we were going through was cool, but I did not like the system at all. And we had played a whole, like, level 1 through 20 or whatever, all the way through, and I didn't like the system, and my character was, like, tolerable, and then I was going to step away. I was like, I can't do this game again. I just don't like the system. Also, because that was one that there were correct decisions, you know, where if you chose to do something a little different, oh, that's not the correct decision, you know, you're playing your character wrong type thing. Or you would choose something and it would be to your detriment.
You have to play the meta build or nothing.
Right. And that kind of had turned me off to it, but the game master was like, hey, for this new one, I'm going to make everybody's character and you're all going to have amnesia. And I was like, oh, okay, I can kind of get behind that, because then me not liking the system and me not being as invested in the system doesn't mean I'm going to make a bad character as opposed to this guy who
right.
has mastered the system. And, you know, at least to start off with, the game master is giving us equal, you know, quote unquote, equal characters. And I actually liked that character class. It was one that when I would go on forums and be like, hey, what would be good for this? Like, everybody was like, do not play this character class. It sucks. Be this other one. This other one is everything this one is and better. But I didn't want to play that other character class,
right.
you know, because that one was like melee and spells, and I didn't want to deal with spells. So I looked at it and was like, I finally found the one character class that I can kind of be happy with a system I don't like to get through this adventure. Again, that the adventures I really liked. And then my character died. And then I was like, yeah. I don't want to be Bob Jr. You know, I don't.
But
but this is the only thing I like. And it really was like, what do I play? And there was an NPC that I was able to like switch over for a few adventures. But like you were talking about various D&D games where then you get resurrections and stuff. So the party was able later to resurrect that character and I was back and no problem. But that was a weird case of me not liking the system. Finally finding a character class that I actually was enjoying and then died. And then it was just like, and then the other case of which that along with a couple of other things had made me realize, besides the game master being an a-hole, the character deaths that I don't like are when I come up with a concept and I'm not sure if it works or not. Like, hey, here's a new concept that I haven't thought about. Let me play this, and then I can see, hey, is this a good concept or a bad concept? And I haven't got to that decision yet, and right. then my character dies.
It's pulled. The rug is pulled out from under you before you actually get to see it in action.
Right. So, like, one, we'd got to a certain... we were playing a system, Earth Dawn 2nd Edition, got to a certain area, and then that game just stopped. Game Master had other things. We kept the group, but that game was put on hold and has never came back. And I had gotten a character that I was testing out that theory, and I didn't have a definite yes or no. So then, 7 or so years later, when we start the 4th edition, and people are making characters, I'm like, man, I'm going to end up making the same type of character just to see if that...
Just to see.
Now, that character is still alive. That character is more advanced, and I have a definite answer of yes. So while I do not want that character to die, if the character would die, I think I would handle it a lot better because of this. And actually, what's funny is that character did die when I was, like, first level, first circle. And then I had a way to get out of that death, so I got out of the death because I hadn't got that yes. So now, even though I'm a lot...
You're okay with it.
Now I'm okay because I figured out that concept. And that's what I realized, because in other things, even when my characters hadn't died, but I hadn't got that yes, this works, or no, this doesn't work, and haven't got my answer, then I want to play that character. Maybe even that concept in a different game with totally different rules, just to see if the concept works. Like, oh, here's a superhero idea in this one superhero game, but it didn't get far enough for me to, like, really go, is this working? So then we start, like, a different group with a different superhero game, and I'm like, hey, can I try this concept? It's because I want to know, does this concept work or not? And if it's something that if I find out, yeah, it works, or no, it doesn't work, even if it's a no, it doesn't work, I'll play the character. It's just, I want to know, does this concept I have work? And that's my current thing that I've learned about myself. That's the more, like, irksome character deaths, is because I haven't gotten that piece of knowledge that I want. And I find that a lot of my role-playing is the exploration of the system and the world and the concepts, and seeing if those all work. So that's my personal
ironically hangout. Like, I think the system also goes to that to a degree, because you would think a lot of the more narrative systems, you would think people would be more attached to their characters, mm-hmm. but I've found it's kind of the opposite, because it's narrative driven and you're telling the character's story, you can kind of decide that they die. And whereas ever since 3rd edition, it existed before 3rd edition D&D, but it was really brought up, the whole concept of builds became more prominent, like feats and everything. And Torg is the same with perks and everything. So you kind of build in your mind what you want to achieve by taking all these cool powers. And then if you do get killed before you've achieved it, it's like, ah, man. Because that's what happened to me in that one adventure. Like, I've had so many cyberpunk characters die. Uh-huh. It's not even worth thinking about, right? But in Torganized play, I have my character Harumi. She's been going along. She's beta, and she's in this adventure. 2 other people already martyred.
Uh-huh.
I'm cursed. It's looking like I'm possibly getting stuck in a bleed somewhere permanently. And I'm just thinking, man, I didn't even get to take this ability yet.
Right.
Which is what I was planning on doing next. And I was just, like, looking around. It's like, I mean, we'll see what happens. But luckily, she got out. But I was still like, this would suck. Even though I've lost tons of characters. But mm-hmm. I think, mechanically, like any system that promotes kind of builds will make you, like... I guess it will just hit you more if you die before you get to see the cool thing happen, which is possibly also why we see so many more, like, YouTubers and everything get upset about characters uh-huh. dying, even on, like, Critical Role or, like, streams they watch that mm-hmm. they're not even playing themselves. Whereas, again, the more narrative games, people kind of almost design their characters to get killed in some cool way. But, I mean, that's just me. Maybe I haven't played enough narrative
actually,
games.
No, actually, that's a really good point, because we both have had those players that love the martyr card, and the mm-hmm. martyr card adds to that narrative. I'm choosing the time and the reason, you know, why my character is going to die. Whereas the other is, yeah, you do have this kind of thought in your head. Is this as cool as I think it is? Or is this as, you know, is this as X as I think it is? And if you can get there, great, you've answered the question. But if you don't get there, then you're always questioning that. I was in a Blades in the Dark game myself, as a player, and my character ended up accidentally on purpose becoming the big bad guy at the end. Like, I was doing shady stuff kind of against
the party.
You're
supposed to be doing shady stuff.
Well, yeah, you're supposed to be, in that game, you're supposed to be doing shady stuff. Very, very opposite of Torg heroics.
Right.
But our group worked well as a group, and we, like, supported each other as a group. But my character was doing stuff on the side, and I was bringing back an Eldritch Horror type thing and making a cult and you know, diverting resources and stuff.
That's exactly what happened in my game.
And at the end of it, there was like a roll. The game master never rolls; it's always the player.
Right. Yeah.
And it was a, you know, are you possessed by the evil entity or not? And I rolled a lot of dice, and they all rolled low, so I failed, and had no fail safe. So I was, you know, my character was possessed and became the big bad end guy. Which was funny, because then I sat back and watched the game master use my character to wreak havoc on the city while everybody else was fighting my character, and they won. It was intense. And even not playing, I found that extremely satisfying, because it was more of a narrative. Hey, Lehman, all of these little steps you took throughout the entire campaign from the very first session to the last session, you set up all of these things, and kind of, and it all led to this. Then it was fulfilling, even as a bad, my character died and I became the bad guy, was because it made sense. My character was stupid. Like the character was very, I don't want to say naive, but the character just had very strange and different thoughts and didn't think things through and had no interest in magic or the occult. But when he was the one who found this thing, then it was like he didn't care until it was in his lap. And then once it was in his lap, he became obsessed with it, was kind of the character idea. And he just did all of these things that he shouldn't have. And if he known
that's
better,
what he spent all his downtime on, huh?
Right, exactly. The downtime was building up this secret cult and stealing artifacts from the party and replacing them with fake artifacts and things. But it was fun.
That kind of segues into the one other thing I wanted to talk about. It's not really a big deal with Torg usually, but not everyone plays with the Delphi Council, and not everyone plays as Goody Two-Shoes. There's always the possibility of PvP, of things happening as well. So, as I mentioned, the one death in World of Darkness that I had was from PvP. Not on purpose. It was because someone was playing a werebear, and they got frenzied, and someone's changeling was standing too close and just got ripped apart. Cyberpunk, we've had tons of PvP. It happens almost all the time. But then in Torg, I never really see that. But I do know there are people that like to play more shadowy mercs and things, like maybe they're more like Stormbreak kind of characters, things like that. How do you feel about that possibility? Like, I would think it would probably turn into quite a slog with people spending possibilities constantly, but
right. And in Torg Eternity, I think player versus player, 99% of the time probably isn't a good idea. The time that and I know Mark and I, we were both players in it. He might have been the game master. But we both had a very good player versus player experience when one of the Storm Knights got mind controlled, and the player went all out. I played that twice, once as a game master and once as a player. And as a game master, the player was like trying everything that they could not to fulfill the mind control.
Right. Trying to weasel out of
like,
it.
Like everything they could. Oh, they said to do this, but if I backflip it in my mind, I could do this other thing, sort of, and it kind of fits what they said. And the one that became an actual true player versus player, the player had his character like seriously attempt to do the thing. You know, basically it was a get the MacGuffin, and we were all trying to get the MacGuffin, and he was trying to get it himself for the bad guys. And that was amazingly fun because we were all like, yeah, that's what you would do. So he was spending possibilities. He was spending cards. He was, you know, using resources and perks. Where in the other one, the guy's like,
was he offering to trade cards?
No, it was kind of like you're cut off from that, so you're no longer part of the the group of trading. But where the other one was like, no, I'm not going to spend possibilities. No, I'm not going to try to boost. He did. And it made it fun. But it wasn't something that occurred every single session. And I think sometimes...
Would they have thought it was fun if he killed one of them, though?
I think we would have been okay with it. Because we were laughing and stuff during the whole thing. Yeah. It wouldn't have been... That part wouldn't have been fun, but I think we would have been accepting of it, right. You know. We ended up knocking him out instead of, you know, killing him, because that was the other thing. Right. Hey, he's turned on us. He's a traitor type thing. I will say also there are I have players who they if you mention player versus player, they're like, not playing, sorry, just not interested in the game, which is fine. I have a couple of games that I game master with most of the same group, but in one of them, one of the points at the beginning, at least, was we will allow player versus player, but it's going to be if you do these things overtly, if you do these things out in the open, there are going to be consequences because, you know, you're not the maniacal person running around town just killing people. If that happens, right. You're going to be put down. If you do things shady behind backs and stuff like that and be evil, then that's fine. But I knew that there were certain players of mine that just would not go for it. So I would tell them, hey, I have this game. The reason why I'm not inviting you to it is not to snub you. It's because we're doing player versus player. And as soon as I said player versus player, they were like, nope, you're right. I'm not, you know, not interested at all. But that's knowing your players.
That's what it all comes back to.
And Jay, I know you have kind of the opposite, where while they're not like out to kill each other, they are out to mess up each other.
They'll play causing cards on each other as much as humanly possible and get in each other's ways and do all sorts of things. It's all good fun and it all works out. They even by making things harder for themselves, the causing cards give so many possibilities. Mm-hmm. Like, I've had games where they end with 9 possibilities,
yep,
and they're
exactly.
Cool and they don't even need them all. So there's a lot of wiggle room in Torg. You know, it's not... You can kind of mess around a bit, but I guess just know when to stop is the key there.
And then, like, if you did go into, like, I guess the last thing, because we're running a little bit over, but not too bad.
Sure.
One of the things, if you decide to go with, like, a anti-hero Storm Knight group or even a Stormer group, kind of like with Operation Soft Cell, where you're doing the Operation Eris, mm-hmm. or the Eris Division, or if you're, you know, playing, like you said, Stormbreak type mentality, then if and when PvP happens as a game master, you're going to have to determine who's on the hero, you know, who's on the hero side and who's on the villain side.
That's true.
To kind of figure out who's doing what in those, you know, circumstances.
Because the initiative gets kind of weird then.
Right. It gets a little weird when everybody's on the villain side, like in Operation right. Soft Cell, but when you have certain ones. And then that one I would look at, okay, what's the situation that caused it? And if you were Delphi Council Storm Knights, which is the side more towards that, and the side mm-hmm. that's more towards that is probably should be the heroes, where the other side is the
yeah. I mean, I would probably still, like, during the mission, even if they were like a bunch of mercs or whatever,
right.
still call them heroes mm-hmm. as far as it goes. But once somebody traitors on them, yeah, that person would have to go on the villain side. Right. And I think it's always a good reminder, if you are allowing PvP or evil characters or anything like that, just to remind people that people aren't necessarily going to accept you mm-hmm. just being a psycho and murdering right. people all the time. You know, it's the lawful good is not lawful stupid kind of thing. It's not carte blanche. So even if you are playing some other group, like all these heist movies and things about criminals or snipers or what have you, they still got to work together.
Right.
It's not usually not till the end when things happen. So that's something to keep in mind, which I think, like, the moral of this entire thing is talk to your group.
Yes, talk to your group.
Manage expectations.
And know them. And look for the nonverbal body language and stuff. Mm-hmm. If you bring up, hey, this might be PvP, you might have some players that say, I accept it, but then mm-hmm. if it would happen to them, they would still not, you know, that's,
yeah.
you know, it's okay until it happens to me. So kind of, like you right. say, know your players, kind of look at their reactions for it. And if you've done that in previous games or you know mentalities, then you can adjust. So hopefully this episode has got you... the viewers and or listeners to kind of think about how Torg Eternity can be affected by Storm Knight deaths, how you can bring in ways to mitigate or change those outcomes from other games, make your Cosmverse your own, as Jay said, and as we say on every one of these episodes. Again, you can email us at torgdcd@gmail.com. We will answer questions, we'll comment on comments, etc. Until then, until next time, we hope you have fun in your own Cosmverse. Bye.